Webster's Dictionary defines compliance as the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. This is the Compliance Guide.
The Compliance Guide.
As a healthcare provider or healthcare professional, navigating the muddy waters of compliance can get tricky.
And that's why we're here.
Helping you mitigate risk while increasing your profitability. This is the Compliance Guide. Now, here's your host, Sean Weiss.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another special edition of the Compliance Guy. As always, I love to begin by saying thank you to each and every single one of you for logging on, tuning in, and just hanging out with me for a little while. And once again, I get to invite back one of my, and I mean this sincerely, one of my most favorite people. He has become a friend. He's somebody that I really get inspired by, because I watched the things that he has gone through in his life. I watched the things that he has persevered through, and his infectious personality, his infectious smile, his classy way of going about everything that he does. So I could only be talking about the one and only Clint Pulver. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing awesome, Sean. Thanks for having me back. It's always good to see you.
It is so good to see you. And, you know, I said to him before we got started, and I know we're on video today, I was apologizing. I got the mountain man thing going. I've been up in Montana, heading back to Wyoming, and it's been about 5 degrees down here in Georgia this past week. So I've hit official mountain man hibernation mode for a little while, but
it looks good.
So, you know, I love having you on, you know, at least once a year, because there's so much going on in your life and it's just fascinating. Like I said, you know, I look at the things that I'm doing and I think to myself, God, I'm so tired. And then I look at everything that you're doing with this incredible tour, you know, your speaking tour, you know, your new documentary series, your masterclasses, everything that's going on. So I kind of want to pick these things apart one by one. I know that we don't have a whole lot of time today because you're getting ready to jump an airplane, but I want to get through as much as we can, because I want people to see what just a little bit of energy and just a little bit of wanting to, you know, succeed, how that can ultimately change somebody's entire life. So let's start with what's going on with the tour. You know, what's new in 2024? Because I had an opportunity to see it a couple times, you know, over the last couple of years, and it's incredible. It's a heck of a show.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, 2024 is setting up to be our best year yet. God, it's been an amazing ride for the last seven and a half years doing this, and we've really strived, me and my team. It's not just me; it's me and a team. We really strive to create an experience for attendees, not just a keynote. And I think that's been our you know, secret sauce, if you will, because there's many, many keynote speakers. There's very few keynote speakers that create incredible, engaging, life-changing experiences from the stage. And with the mix of the drums and the music and, again, the showmanship, the craftsmanship, the research and the content, it kind of creates that ultimate package that creates change, that creates inspiration, and leaves people going, okay, I want to do better. I want to be better. And that's a cool thing to be a part of.
It is, you know, knowing that you have the ability to inspire and help people who feel like they're searching for more purpose, more meaning, you know, both professionally and personally. And I remember the first keynote, you know, and you know what, I'm going to stop calling it a keynote. I'm going to call it the first experience I had, you know, because it really is. You're right. It's an experience. It's the Clint Pulver experience. It's an incredible opportunity to listen to somebody who has spent time with some of the most prominent, you know, motivational speakers and, you know, life leaders. And we could talk about Maxwell, who, I know is a big hero of yours, and you know, and somebody I've, you know, sincerely enjoyed reading his books and listening to him speak and trying to glean, you know, life lessons from him as well. You know, talking about the seven effective habits of successful people, and when I want to go back and ask this question, when did you first realize that building a platform to help people achieve and believe more in themselves, when did that first become something that you said, it's really what I want to do? Because I know you did the Undercover Millennial, which was so cool.
Yep.
But when did you realize that you really wanted to be this larger than life personality that helped people really grow and strive?
I had the opportunity when I was a senior in high school. I gave a talk at church, and there was a guy in the congregation, just a member of the church that owned a leadership consulting company, heard me give this just kind of talk from the pulpit. And he came up after and he said, "Hey, listen, you did a great job. And I would love for you to come down to Southern Utah and present to this leadership conference of high school seniors." And I was a senior at the time. And I looked at him and I said, "No, thanks." I was like, "I'm good. Like, I'm a high school student. I don't want to go talk to other high school students. I just don't think I'll do it." And he's like, "I'll pay you $500. And I was like,
done.
It's like, "When do you need me?" And I went down and I did that presentation, and I put together just this little workshop about music and leadership and things that I had learned as a professional drummer. And I felt on fire. It lit me up. I felt like I was doing something that I was passionate about. I had, you know, a sense of purpose. Kids were coming up saying, like, "I'm going to live differently. I'm going to do things differently because of what you said." And that was kind of really one of the first big experiences that I had influencing a large crowd or influencing a large amount of people. And then after, I had six other schools that came up after, and their administrators, their principals, their counselors, and they said, "We want you to come speak at our school. We will pay you to come speak at our school." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? Like, I grew up in a small little town. Like, we never had speakers come to our school. I didn't even know this was a job." And they're like, "Oh yeah, we pay speakers, hire speakers all the time." And I said, "Okay." And I would go do that and have more fun and achieve more fulfillment and feel like I was doing something bigger than myself, but also making more money as a high school kid than I would working months at my part-time high school job. And it just opened my eyes to the reality of doing something really significant in your life versus just trying to be successful. And, but the sad part though, I have to be honest in this, the sad part is I never looked at it as a viable career. And so I ended up going to college. You know, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but wanted to go to flight school. That whole dream ended, ended up going to college and pursued something in the medical field that kind of just checked off all the boxes, had the 401k, the benefits, the works, but didn't light my soul on fire. And I quickly burned out after that. And October 26, 2016 is when I announced to the world that I was quitting my job and jumping into the world of professional speaking full time. And that was a day I'll never forget.
Yeah, it's incredible to think that something that sparked an interest in you merely because you were a senior in high school, and at first you're thinking to yourself, when this person says, "Hey, really want you to come down and talk to this group of individuals, these seniors," and you're a senior, and you're like, "Nah, I don't think so." And then all of a sudden you think about it, you know, $500 to go down there. Okay, you know, how bad is it going to be?
Yeah.
I got to tell you, when I was a senior in high school, that would be, I don't care if they offered me $5,000. There was no way this guy was getting up on stage in front of five people to talk about. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, there's so many, you know, for me, I think what helps me to gravitate towards you, and I'm a lot older than you. I'm an OG now, man. I'm 50. But I think one of the things that helps me gravitate to you is the fact that, you know, I've been a professional speaker now, you know, for, you know, since 1997, when I really got into the world of consulting, and I've had the opportunity to, you know, I don't give an experience, but I've given keynotes, and I've lectured to major medical associations with thousands of people in attendance. And it really is something when you get up there and you look out and, you know, every eye is on you waiting for that first bit of information that they can glean. And then you walk off the stage, and there's a sense of fulfillment when people come up to you and they say, man, that was intriguing. It really changed my perspective on how I, now you talk about life and improving life. I talk about regulatory compliance and legal issues and how not to go to jail.
Yeah.
So
you're really on it. Awesome.
But, you know, so it's been a wonderful experience, and you actually introduced me to the Professional Speakers Association, which has made a tremendous difference in the way that I build my presentations, the way that I prepare for my keynotes, you know, the information that I can glean from some of these world-class speakers. And it, you know, that's one of the things that I'm grateful, because, you know, you and I had an offline conversation, and you're like, man, you really need to look at this group. And one of the best things that I ever did for my professional speaking, you know, aspect of my career.
That's awesome.
But I want to get into the college. So I know you went to Utah Valley University.
Yep.
And you were studying aviation. But the aviation that interested you was rotary blades, mm-hmm. not the fixed wing. Mm-hmm. And there's a great story. And I think it was your uncle who was telling this story, and we'll talk about the documentary, about going to a air show. And next thing you know, Clint's gone. There's a helicopter going up in the air, and Clint's waving bye-bye. let's talk about how that all came to be, because that's actually a really cool story.
Aviation for me, Sean, has always just been in my blood. I just absolutely love it, and specifically helicopters. There's nothing else like it. The ability to just hover and to go up closer to something in the air, and the power and the aerodynamics and the engineering that goes into rotary and vertical flight just enthralled me, even to the sound of just the blades biting into the air. And I remember when I was young, I had the opportunity to go to my first air show, and my grandpa, who loved aviation, and my uncle, who was also a pilot, they took me to this air show. And for me, I mean, airplanes, you know, it's okay. It's all right. Jets, super cool. But helicopters, for me, it was just, I don't know. The jets are awesome, but they're so fast. And you zoom by and you see it, and it's like, oh, there it is. There it goes. Where a helicopter, it's like, you just get the full experience. And I mean, and it's landing right in front of you. And I just loved it. So the first thing I did when I got there is I went out and I looked around, and I saw all of the airplanes on display. There was one helicopter. And I went up, I was trying to see if I could find the pilot. I went into the fixed base operator, this office that they have at the airport. And I said, do you guys know who has the helicopter? Who owns the helicopter? And the guy's like, I have no idea. And then there's this voice behind me saying, like, who wants to know? Who's asking? And I turn around and I'm like, listen, I love helicopters. I want to be a helicopter pilot. I just love everything about rotary flight. And he was like, well, you're in luck. He's like, because I'm the helicopter pilot. And he was like, why don't you come out here with me and let's go take a look? And I was like, let's go. And we walked out to the ramp. We're looking at this helicopter, and he puts me in the seat and he goes, want to go fly? And I mean, my eyes lit up. I was like a kid on Christmas morning. And I'd never gone flying before, ever. Never had been in the air. And you know me, Sean, I believe in moments. I'm a big proponent of moments in our lives. I think that's what we remember in our lives. We don't remember days. We remember moments.
Absolutely.
And I think the greatest stories of our lifetime is those moments. That's what we remember. And this was a moment for me that I will never forget. And he buckled me up in that helicopter, and he sat over in the other seat. He sparked up that turbine engine, and those blades just started to rotate. And he pulled up that collective. and that first feeling of just the magic carpet ride, which is helicopter flight, it connected me to that for life. And I just said, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I want to do with the rest of my life.
And yeah.
Yeah. He created a moment.
Yeah. And, you know, and you're right. You know, if I ever wrote a book, it would be My Life in Moments.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was raised by my grandparents. I think we've talked about this before. Yeah. You know, I didn't really have a father and a stable mother, you know, in a household growing up. And, you know, I was blessed that I actually had my grandparents, my maternal grandparents. And my grandfather was an ex-war pilot, had a Cessna 172 when we were kids, took my brother and I flying. I remember the first moment that I walked around an airplane and I looked at the propeller and I looked at the wings and I looked at the ailerons and the rudders. And,
yeah,
you know, I just, you know, then climbing up inside and, you know, you hear that master switch come on and you hear the avionics come on and you're just like, something just lights you up and you're like, wow. And, you know, you hear the radios come alive with getting an ATIS and then talking to the ground and telling me I have the information Zulu and, taxing, you know. So for me, I've been on, you know, the helicopters. I've gotten a chance to fly on a Bell and a Dolphin and it's incredible for me. It's the fixed wing, right? So, you know, I got my first solo in a 152. Mm-hmm. Then I matriculated to the 172, the 182 RGs, then, you know, to the beach and then, you know, King Airs and got a chance to fly right seat, you know, on some Lears, which was amazing. But you, as your pilot career was just getting started, you got some pretty devastating news. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I went after I graduated high school. So I actually flew fixed wing first and became an airplane pilot and got my fixed wing rating and was well on my way. I went and did 2 years of a study abroad service mission for my church and absolutely loved that. Came home and was ready to jump right into flight school. But at this point, I had to renew my driver's license. And I went to the DMV and I went to go do the vision portion of that. And I put my head in the black box and I couldn't read the letters. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I said, I can't, I just see six black dots. Huh. And she comes around the counter. She puts her head in the black box and she reads off CKGELFWZYN. She's like, it's there. You're telling me you don't see that? She's like, can you read? And I was like, yes, I can read.
Can you read?
She's like, then honey, I think you're blind. And I looked at her and I was so confused. And I said, listen, ma'am, I drove here today. Like I have my driver's license. And she's like, well, you're not driving home. And she pushed a big red stamp on my paperwork and it said denied. And I'm now under house arrest at the DMV. I had to call my mom. She picked me up. Long story short, I ended up at the Moran Eye Center at the University of Utah with one of the top leading authorities in a rare and degenerative eye disease known as keratoconus. And as a young, you know, at that point, 21-year-old kid, my eyes were as bad as an 87-year-old's. And he looked at me and he goes, Clint, your disease that you have in your eyes, he says, it's degenerative. So meaning it gets worse and worse slowly over time. And the reason why you haven't really caught this is because there's no comparison, right? The way you think you see is the way you think other people see. And all keratoconus patients, we know if we need to see something, we just squint our eyes. And as we do that, we can see clearer. And I remember him looking at me saying, what do you want to do with your life? And I said, doc, I said, there's nothing more important to me than flying. I want to fly. I want to be a helicopter pilot. And he got really serious with me. And he said, it's never going to happen for you. He said, let me tell you why. He said, because you're going to go blind by the age of 31. He said, at the rate of what's going on, he said, we can maybe do a corneal transplant. He said, the failure rate on that is super high right now. And that's the best I can do. He said, but everything I put in your medical charts and your history will ground you from being a commercial pilot. And you'll never see 2020. And like, I remember, I just tears in my eyes. My mother was with me and like that was another moment, right? Sometimes it's the good moments we remember, and it's the bad moments that we also
remember.
And I went from having passion and purpose and direction as a young kid to literally having no idea what I was going to do. So I ended up going to school, pursued this other degree, and worked in the medical field as an orthopedic specialist. Made great money, but wasn't fulfilled. And I remember I sat down with three of my buddies just out of desperation one day. And I just said, guys, I'm so unhappy with what I'm doing. And there was a quote that was shared with me in college by Oscar Wilde. And the quote has rang true throughout my whole life. And I think maybe we've talked about this, Sean, but the quote says, to live is the rarest thing in the world. For most people merely exist.
It's a great quote. And it's something that I think is so profound. If you take a minute to stop and really think about that.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one of those moments that lit a spark for you, right?
Yeah. And I love that quote, and it haunted me every day post-college. And I said to my buddies at dinner that night, I said, wouldn't it be crazy if you could find a job? Like, you could find a career that allowed you to do the three P's. I called them three P's. Something, so passion, purpose, and the ability to provide. What if it could light you up? It was something intrinsically passionate to you, innate to your desires and fulfillment. Second, what if it could give you a sense of purpose, meaning you were doing something bigger than yourself while you were doing it, a sense of doing something better for or bigger for other people. And then the third part was the ability to provide in a way that's sufficient for you, that you could pay your bills, where every day you felt like you weren't just surviving in life, but you could actually thrive financially, because life's expensive. And if you want to be a responsible human being, it costs some money. And I told my buddies, I was like, one job that could allow you to do all three. And one of my friends was like, I just don't think that's possible, man. Like think about it, like look at a school teacher, full of passion, purpose, but every summer they're looking for an extra job to make ends meet.
Which is shameful.
Yeah, totally. And or like look at a doctor, right? You know, they're making good money, but you know, they're away from their family and issues with malpractice and stress. And like, I just don't like what you're asking for, Clint, is so rare. That's what he said. And as soon as he said that, it triggered that quote from Oscar Wilde in my mind. To live is the rarest thing in the world. For most people merely exist. And 2 weeks after that, I quit my job. And I announced it to the world, and I jumped back into the world of professional speaking and started a book, did a research study. It's turned into this career, you know, drumming from the stage, helping organizations to create a place that people never want to leave. But fast forward, right as I began that, they came out with a new procedure called cross-linking. And it was not FDA approved. And it was a new procedure to help stop the progression of people that had my eye disease. And I remember I got the phone call and I cried on the phone because I've been waiting for something like this. The hope was that medical technology would increase to the point where I wouldn't have to have a transplant. And I was one of the first human trials for that study. They did the procedure on my left eye. And then 6 months later, they did the procedure on my right eye. And it completely stopped the progression of my disease.
It's amazing.
It was amazing. And you know, I still couldn't fly, but at least I knew I wasn't going blind.
Right. Now, you went through some lens changes as part of the surgery, correct?
Oh yeah. I've worn every single type of lens you could possibly imagine to wear, from hybrid lenses to gas permeable contact lenses, rigid lenses. I mean, you name it, all the different advancements. And that's why the story is so significant, because a year ago, I went in for a routine eye exam, and I go to the Accelo Eye Center. They're an incredible facility, top, state of the art, just leading authorities in specifically to my eye disease. I'm very lucky to have them close. And I sat down with a doctor. His name's Dr. Lovelace, and he's looking at my charts. He's looking at my history, and he goes, "Why are you not in scleral lenses?" And I was like, what are you talking about? He was like, you were a pilot once, right? And I was like, yeah, that was a long time ago. And I just gave up on that dream a long time ago. And he was like, listen, we got to talk. And he told me about this new technology, these new lenses, how they're shaped, how the curvature and this liquid that they put in the lens allows me to see, but also controls the shape of my eyes to the point that they're taking people with horrible eyesight and they're transforming their ability to see to 20/20.
And he was amazing.
Like, he's like, we got to give this a shot. And I'll be honest, Sean, I looked at him and I said, listen, with all due respect, like it's kind of been like a love hate relationship with aviation in all my life. And every doctor through every time I do this, they always say, let's try something else. Let's do something else. And it just never works. And he goes, listen, give me a shot. This is new technology. What do we have to lose? But time.
There's that moment.
Yeah. And I said, okay. And we went through about 4 months of fit after fit, tweak after tweak, mapping of the eye. And I will never forget again, another moment in that office. This is probably 6 months ago. And he's sitting there, you know, is one better, is two better, is three better. And we get to the point and then he puts up the board and he goes, okay, read this line. And I go C, D, E, L, F, M. And then he goes, okay, read the next line. C, K, G, E, L, F, W, Z, Y, N. And I pause, he paused, and I just said, what line is that? What line is that? He's like, dude, you just hit the 2020 line. And it was like, oh my gosh. And the first thing I thought about, Sean, was like, the first thing that came to my mind is I can fly. I can fly. And what once was a lost dream can now become a reality again. And a week after that, I bought my first helicopter.
So I want to get into that.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So you purchased a Hill HX50.
That's right.
And this is for folks that are not aware of what this helicopter is. This is an individual in his team's life's work to create the ultimate private consumer helicopter. And this thing is so state of the art. It is just absolutely incredible. There are over 1,000 pre-orders at this point already, which is incredible. But this is where the story for me kind of really got interesting, because I remember reaching out to you when I first heard, you know, about the pilot being launched, Finding Hill. And I'm going to make sure I put a link in the description to the YouTube channel to where you can watch the pilot. You can watch the first couple of episodes, and there's more to come, and we'll talk about that. But talk about what that experience was, because I honestly felt like I was going through that experience with you. One, because I know you and I consider you a friend. And I remember Jill and I were sitting there watching it, and I said to her, this is the coolest freaking thing to watch all of the adversity that Clint has gone through in his life, to losing the opportunity of doing the thing that he was so passionate about, to now regaining the possibility. And the first thing he did was what? Goes out and buys a freaking helicopter. That's Oscar Wilde.
Yeah, totally. For sure. Yeah.
So let's talk about that, you know, let's talk about this documentary.
So the documentary came to be because, well, first off, I mean, I bought the helicopter, and I after I did that, I was just overcome with gratitude, because you have to realize this has been 18 years of a dream that has been suppressed and literally just canceled because I just physically couldn't do it, right? And I even to the point where I wouldn't go to air shows anymore, Sean, because as much as I loved them, at the end, I would just leave empty and I would feel just depressed, because it's like, oh, this is like where I know I'm supposed to be, but I just can't. And, you know, there's even, you know, on a spiritual note, like my relationship with God, and it's like, why? Like golly, this is what I want to do. And I've learned that sometimes good things fall apart so that better things can fit together. And as someone who believes in God and has faith in that, that he's the great orchestrator. And sometimes there are things that we don't quite totally understand that later you look back and you go, oh my gosh, like I can see the orchestration. I can see the tapestry that was created in allowing me to live a better story. So that's been a big part of this. And I, in all of the just the gratitude for this experience, I wrote a LinkedIn message to Jason Hill. He is the guy, he is the founder, he's the Elon Musk, if you will, of Hill Helicopters. And he is totally innovating and changing the game in rotary flight. And I couldn't believe he was on LinkedIn. And I just shot him a message. I was like, you'll probably never hear from the guy. But in the message, I just said, thank you. I told him about my story. I told him what the Hill Helicopter meant for me, or, you know, my journey and the process of getting to this. And he wrote back, and just the kindest message. And he said, I'm so inspired by what you're doing. I'd love for you to fly out. I'd love to bring you out. And I'd love for you to experience what we're doing here. And fly to the UK, into Rugeley, England, and experience this. And I'm someone that, like, I believe in the power of 20 seconds of insane courage. If in a moment where you're like, what is happening? If you can just muster up 20 seconds of insane courage and take action, it's amazing what can happen in your life. And in that moment, I just wrote back and I said, I'm in. I said, yes. I mean, this is, you take the chance, and you've been given this opportunity to meet, you know, an engineering legend, but also someone that is just could be a part of an incredible story. And I bought a ticket. I went out and I met with Jason Hill. And that's how the beginning of this documentary started. And this idea, they realized and captured my passion, my heart, but also the story behind this. And that there was a journey, and there was a journey still to be had, and there's a journey still to take place. The cool thing about the documentary is it's still happening as we speak right now, with flight school, the training, the preparation, all of the adventures of finding Hill, finding this helicopter that have yet to take place and that have already taken place. It just creates the ultimate aviation adventure. And it's really not about aviation. It's about living. It's about dreaming more while you're awake. It's about realizing that life is short. You never know if tomorrow will come. Tomorrow is not promised. So live, take action now, and live that life by design. Live a life of fulfillment and significance, and do the things that you truly love. Dream more while you're awake. And the hope is that this documentary inspires people to do more of that.
It is definitely, it's definitely inspiring. There's no doubt about it. You know, I enjoyed, the first couple of episodes. I'm waiting for the next few to drop. Now you're going to take possession of the helicopter December of 2024. Is that when it is?
Yeah, it'll actually probably be closer to 2026.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yep. Is when it will actually take place.
Okay.
So, yep.
Okay. So you're going through all the flight training, all the preparation. Let me ask you, the first time you climb back into a helicopter, mm-hmm. knowing that your vision has been restored, you put on your, you know, your headset, you cranked up the, you know, the avionics. What was that feeling like?
Well, the magical part about that is really the first time that that happened was with Jason Hill. And you'll have to watch episode 2 to experience that.
Yep.
But flying with him was amazing. I mean, flying in a helicopter, first of all, is magical. But flying a helicopter with Jason Hill, that's a whole nother level.
Well, I remember you sitting on the bed, waiting for a call, watching the weather, hoping that it was going to clear. And, it, you know, you're kind of sitting there going through it with you. And you're like, come on, dang it. I know the weather's got to clear up. This has to... And sure enough, you get the message and you're like, we're out of here.
Let's go.
Let's go. And yep. You headed back over to their house, which, by the way, if people have never been to the English countryside, it's absolutely gorgeous. I was blessed Great. To, you know, spend time over in Europe, working with the Department of Defense for several years and getting a chance to go all through Germany and England and France and different places. Just amazing. But this Finding Hill documentary is something that is, it's an experience once again, because you get taken on a roller coaster ride with Clint, from the early stages of childhood and realizing and recognizing his passion for aviation, getting his first taste of flying in a rotary machine in a helicopter, to being told that he's never going to be able to fly, to advancements in healthcare and technology that have now, with the grace of God, given him back his 20/20 vision so that he could now once again pursue his passion. And that's why maybe it needs to be your book, A Life in Moments, not mine.
you can write the foreword, Sean. There we go.
I would, you know what? I wrote a foreword for Dr. Stephen Soloway for his New York Times bestseller. It was the scariest thing that I've ever done. If I ever get that opportunity, I will make you proud.
Okay. All right. Noted.
All right. So the last thing I want to talk about is your masterclass, because I've got an opportunity to watch, I think, 4 or 5 of the programs that are out there. I think I just got done watching 5.6, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the genius behind that, because I know it was tied directly to your book, which has become a national bestseller. It is so widely appreciated, loved, adored by everybody who picks it up. We're talking Fortune 500s, Fortune 100s. We're talking the biggest companies in the world are looking to you to help them create a place where people say, I love it here.
Yeah. The book was a tremendous amount of work. I'll never do it again. still on that bandwagon.
So you're saying I'm not writing the foreword.
I will never write another research-based book again. It was so much work. I'm so glad I did it, right? But it was a lot of work. We'll go and do these keynotes and these experiences for these organizations. And then the CEO comes up or the HR director, and they're like, this was incredible. How do we get more of this? Like, how do we keep the message alive? And that is where we decided to create this masterclass series. And they're 52 videos. They're micro videos. So no video is longer than like 6 to 7 minutes long, short, digestible, to the point, but very beautiful content, engaging content. And the thought was that obviously there's 52 weeks in a year. And so every week, it's just, here's one idea. Dedicate 6 minutes as a manager, as a leader, to watching something that is inspiring, that's engaging, but also actionable, that gives you something that's prescriptive that you can implement in your team to create an organization that people never want to leave. And in doing so, I think we've created something that is just, again, complementary to creating change. I was always my biggest pet peeve as a speaker. I'd go in, do my thing. Everybody was on fire. And then 2 weeks goes by and people get back into the mundane and the routine of life. And, you know, does it really matter? Are we really making a difference? I just thought, can we create other value adds, but other things for an organization to keep the change and the inspiration continuing to the point where they take it and they adopt it into their own culture? And that's what the masterclass is and has done. And it's been so cool to see the significance that it's created in the lives of individuals.
Yeah. Again, just another incredible achievement that you have made in your professional life. And again, I attribute it back to your faith, your desire to succeed and to create and leave behind a better world than maybe what you found when you came into it. And you're doing that. So
thank you, Sean.
Last question for you, my friend. How many stops are on the Clint Pulver experience this year so far?
So far, I think we've got about 30 stops booked, and we'll probably round out the year with another 30. So that's like a good, that's a lot. And that's enough for me right now in my current stage of life. So
yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, you owe me a call when you hit Atlanta.
Okay. All right.
I want you coming down to the winery and vineyard, spend some time with us down there, enjoy. And,
that'd be awesome.
We'll toast to all the wonderful things that you continue to do, not just for yourself, but for humanity. How's the family doing?
They're good. They're doing awesome. We've got our little new boy. We lost our son. God's been 2 years now. And, we have our another little boy that was born 7 months ago, little Tommy, and he is just awesome. And yeah, our family is totally complete now, which is so fun and fulfilling. And Kelly's doing great. She's performing in a show. She's the performer. She's the entertainer, not me. She's way more talented than I am. And so she's in a show right now in a theater here locally that does amazing productions. So she's rocking that, and the girls are doing great in school, and it's just a beautiful chapter of life. It's busy, right? We have 3 kids under 4, so that's busy, but I love it. Being a dad. I mean, all the things, like speaking, drumming, helicopters, but like all of that is second to being a dad and a good husband. So family's definitely number one for me.
Absolutely. There's nothing better. There's nothing more rewarding, especially when you hit my age and you have, you know, a daughter who's 32 and a son who's turning 30 now and a daughter who just turned 28 and 6 grandbabies. That's what I live for, is to watch them grow, watch them blossom and turn into incredible human beings who want to leave this world a better place than what they came into. Yep. And it's people like you who I get to introduce to my kids, to my grandkids, that they can watch and they can learn and see that if you are patient, you're willing to work hard, you're willing to put your faith into the good Lord, that he will always turn that light on for you, no matter how dark it gets. You can persevere through the worst of times and find yourself at the top of the mountain celebrating the best of times. And I commend you. I take my hat off to you, and you continue to be a champion for all of the people who want to thrive and do better, not just for themselves, but for humanity and for their families. So to you, thank you.
You're very welcome, Sean. I appreciate you. Thanks for all the good you're doing. It's an honor to call you a friend, and grateful for just your advocacy and support that you've always given from day one. So thank you.
Absolutely. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of The Compliance Guy. As always, you know, I started this show and I talked about truly being able to speak with one of my favorite people. And I hope after this conversation, Clint becomes one of your favorites. If you are not familiar with Clint Pulver, shame on you, because if you follow our show, you know we are a huge, huge supporter of everything that Clint does. Get out, find him on LinkedIn, follow him, go check out his website. I'll make sure I put that in the description of the podcast today. Check out his masterclass, because I'm telling you, I'm now into, I think, the 5th or 6th of the videos, and I am really enjoying it. As Clint said, they are easy, digestible, thoughtful, provoking, and really get the juices flowing for you. Again, if you get an opportunity to see Clint in action, find out where he's going to be, find out if it's open to the public or not. If not, you can always find his videos online, so do that. All right, we're going to be back next week with another fantastic guest. I can't wait for our interview coming up. We'll tell you all about it in the next couple of days. So remember, until then, be good to yourself, but more importantly, y'all just be good to each other. Take care.
You've been listening to The Compliance Guy. Sean has been doing this for 28 years. He holds 10 national board certifications. He's a partner and the vice president of compliance for Doctors Management, LLC. He's a subject matter expert in federal court. He's lectured at the most prestigious institutions. He's engaged with members of Congress in both chambers. So what we're saying is he's qualified? We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on social media at The Compliance Guy. See you next time on The Compliance Guy.